Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around this topsy-turvy world. Welcome to DeveloPod. And with me, I have Tanya Meridou and James Taylor in the virtual studio, me, Christian Tiplady. Hello, both.
Hello, welcome.
Hi, everyone, and hi, Tanya. Hi, Christian. So this is our first episode since the announcement of the postponement of the IATEFL conference in Manchester this year, 2020. So, of course, originally we had other plans for this episode related to our PCE day, but we've had to change those. Isn't that right, Tanya?
Quite significantly, in fact. Yes.
Yeah, but everything is postponed until next year in Harrogate, of course. But in the meantime, we've got a different schedule for this DeveloPod podcast.
Well, Tanya, do you want to tell everyone what we're going to talk about today then instead?
Sure. Well, given the current situation that thousands of teachers have now suddenly found themselves in the position of having to teach online, we felt that it would be very current and appropriate for us to do a podcast about online teaching. We're also very fortunate in having a bit of an expert in our midst with James very knowledgeable about online teaching and has been teaching online for about 3 years. So we figured it would be really appropriate to switch to this topic and hopefully provide some really good input and information and resources to people who might be a little bit stressed right now at suddenly having to teach online.
So let me ask you then, well, Christian, you first, do you have any experience of teaching online?
Sure, I've taught online. I've trained up with a major online teaching company as well.
But I'd say I'm still a relative novice.
Yeah, and Tanya, so tell us a bit about your situation, what you're going through at the moment.
Well, I've never taught online before. I have, in the past week, had a couple of crash course webinars of learning how to teach online. I'm somewhat competent on Zoom. I've enrolled in a 5-week program online to learn how to teach online. And I'm also not really an online learner. So even from the learning perspective, I don't have much experience. And I have to say, in my teaching context, I think I'm more of the norm, at least here in Canada, teaching in a Canadian college university context. And as many people might know, and it's probably similar to the same situations in your countries, all of our face-to-face classes have been suspended. And we are expected, as of Monday, to begin transferring all of that content to an online delivery format. So there's an awful lot of teachers that I'm in touch with and including myself, that feel a little uncertain about how to proceed.
It's a very good point. I think uncertain times and people have been thrown in the deep end a little with this. There are many people who are proficient, but I think it's very much a mixed bag. And same thing with our school. It's all been face-to-face teaching. I've been encouraging to have some online component for quite some time, and we're being forced into it, and we'll do it professionally. But still, there are teachers there who don't have the experience and need that support.
Yeah, it's a difficult time for a lot of people. So hopefully today's episode will help some people. We're going to give you some tips, some suggestions. There's a lot to take in. There's a lot of information generally when it comes to online training. Obviously, we're not going to cover even a fraction of it today, but we'll try and give you some tips, some hints, and hopefully you'll find it helpful. Okay, so should we kick things off with a bit of a demonstration?
Sure.
Excellent. Sounds great.
So I will say to the people listening to the podcast that we're also recording this as a video. So what we're going to do is we're going to share this portion of the podcast as a video as well. Just have a look on our social networks to find it. And then you can have a look at what we're talking about here as well. So you can get the audio and the video for this section. Let's have a look at the first tip. So to explore the possibilities. By this, what I mean is that there are a lot of things that you can do online, but if you don't have the experience, perhaps you would think that they would be impossible. You know, the teachers who are being put into a situation like you, Tanya, where they have to just trying to think, okay, this is what I would do in my face-to-face classroom. How can I do this online? And some of those things, it's not immediately obvious how you would do it. But to get an idea and understanding of what is possible, you have to explore. So you have to look around what's available. So when we record this podcast, we use Zoom. That's also the same technology that I use for teaching online.
That seems to be, from what I'm hearing at least, the platform of choice for a lot of schools. It depends on the institution. I've been talking to universities, for example, that are looking into other forums. For example, they're talking about Adobe Connect or perhaps Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, Google Hangouts as well.
Yeah, yeah. There are other things out there. So know that Zoom is one of the most popular.
Absolutely.
Try other things, though, and see what really works for your organization.
You might be a manager or a senior teacher where you have some influence, perhaps. Otherwise, you could be teaching privately.
Yeah, and of course, we're talking about Zoom here, but for many teachers, you're going to be working for an institution where they decide what platform you're going to use. You may not even have any say in the matter. So if that's the case, then basically you need to explore what is possible within that platform. So I want to show you a couple of things that I use. So first thing, and I've chosen a couple of very simple examples that I think that people who are used to teaching in a face-to-face classroom are going to find most immediately applicable for them. So nothing too outlandish or fancy. So let's imagine you're teaching with a course book. So something I like to do, just very simply, I take a scan or photo of the page that we're going to be working on. Let me emphasize that my students all have the book. They're not using this as the course book, but they have the book. But this is very helpful if you're giving instructions, especially. I also have my iPad here. And so with this, what I do is I can use my stylus pen, which was one of those free gifts you get given at conferences. And this may be the most useful one that I've ever been given. Using my iPad and my stylus pen, I can annotate and highlight different aspects of the text to make sure that the students are concentrating on the things that I need them to do. And so I can highlight different elements, and I find that to be really, really useful. You know, it's really helpful, just this very quick and easy thing, but can waste a lot of time sort of giving instructions and holding up the book and trying to point at things. This is a much quicker, easier way of doing it. One of the best things about Zoom is the ability to share specific applications. So you don't have to share your entire desktop, but you can choose a particular thing that you want to share. So you don't have to share everything. You know, if you've got a very untidy desktop or a million tabs open in your browser, you don't have to share all of that with the students. You can choose a specific thing and share that. So I actually use Google Chrome as my browser for when I'm teaching. And I don't use it when I'm not teaching. So I can keep those two things separate. And so I can make sure that it's tidy, the students don't see anything they're not supposed to see, but at least it looks more professional and more tidy. If you don't have a stylus pen, you can use your finger, it's fine. If you don't have an iPad, you can use your phone, although obviously it's a bit more fiddly. As I said, these are the resources that are available to me, and I can do very simple things. But you know, you as a teacher have to find out basically what you've got available and try and find a way of doing that.
I'd like to jump in with 2 points. First of all, I think Zoom also has an annotate tab, so you can share whatever you want, like your screen or that document. And so you don't have to have a stylus pen. You can click on annotate and then just use your mouse to highlight things.
Yeah, with a whiteboard you share. Mm-hmm.
The second thing was the concern about privacy. So I think that was a really good tip to actually just choose a different browser so that things didn't accidentally pop up I think that's a really good tip. Just do a different browser for your teaching.
Yeah, turn your notifications off so you're not getting things popping up all the time. Little things like this are, you know, like they're just things that you'll get better at as it goes along when you realize you don't want unwanted distractions and things like this. Okay, can I show you another cool thing I like to use as well in conjunction with this? This is within Google Drive. It's called Jamboard, and it's basically a whiteboard that you can use. So what I would do is send the link and share this Google Doc, because it is a Google Doc, right, of different type, but share that with the students so that they can open it in their browser and see it directly there. So Jamboard is available within Google Drive. And when you open a new document, when you have the options, you can open a Jamboard there. But it's also an app available on mobile devices, including my iPad again. So what I can do is have that open on my iPad, and then I can use it to as a sort of shared whiteboard with the students. So if you're a teacher who is someone who likes having a whiteboard, who likes being able to write on the board, and it's sort of struggling to think, how could I do that with my students in an online setting, then this is a very sort of simple solution, in that all you have to do is open the document, share it with your student, they open it on their browser, and then they're able to see your annotations and your and things as the lesson goes along. Again, I'm going to use a stylus. If you want to, you can use your finger, right? It's fine. You can do it on your phone. It's not complicated, and it has some really nice little features. So as well as just being like a regular whiteboard, but something that I think is pretty amazing, actually, especially if you're someone who is not very good at drawing like me, then it has what they call assistive drawing tools. And what you can do with those is it will help you to draw a picture. So I'm going to draw a picture of a house now. It's not going to be a great picture, and it will appear on the screen for the learners and the people watching the video. And then it will make a suggestion to me and say to me, did you mean this, for example? And for the podcast listeners, this is a very nice picture, proper illustration of a house, which is way better than anything I could ever draw. So like these little features are actually really, really, really nice. It's, you know, like I said, it's not that difficult to use. You have to play around, try it out. So whichever platform you're being asked to use, then it's this kind of experimentation that is important and can help you give good lessons.
Is it possible to use this Jamboard feature within Zoom or a virtual classroom? Or do you have to kind of go out and everybody's in this shared Google Doc?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it makes more sense to send it to them so that they can open it separately, because I think that you would be able to do things so that they could do stuff on the whiteboard as well, right? Whereas if you're screen sharing it within Zoom, I don't think they'd be able to.
Right.
So to me, it just makes mm-hmm. more sense to have it separate. And it isn't a big deal to have it open separately, because all they need to do is have it open in the browser anyway. Yeah, you could also use just a regular Google Doc. And in that, you could do the same things, you know, a lot of the same things. You can type, you could drop images into there, and you could do a lot of things like that as well. So there's a lot you could do with just a regular Google Doc. You don't necessarily have to use the Jamboard. I just like it because I can do my little drawings.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is it's we're not highlighting a feature that is specific to any one online platform. So it doesn't matter what platform you use, virtual classroom, Adobe Connect, Zoom,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
You could be talking to them on Skype and have that as a, you know, if you wanted to, it would work with any of those. It's separate, yeah.
For me personally, I would say as soon as I start combining things, I can get quite lost. And some students can as well, particularly those who are inexperienced with technology, mm-hmm. those, for example, with a learning need, for example, dyslexia. So mm-hmm. you have to find out what works for your particular students as well within the confines of the choice that you have.
So in summary then, use an add-on whiteboard like Jamboard, which sounds great, if you need to and you want the extra facilities. Otherwise, personally, I'd keep it simple and use the integrated whiteboard that Zoom and some other platforms have.
So welcome back, everyone, to the second part of this podcast. We just took a little break, and now we're back with the second of my slides. So second point I want to make is about preparation, right? Prepare, prepare, prepare. Now, obviously, as teachers, when we're teaching or training or whatever we do, we prepare. Of course, we prepare our lessons and so on, right? But if you're fairly new to teaching online, you can't sort of do the same shortcuts maybe that you're used to doing in a face-to-face classroom. So for me, when I teach with a course book, for example, depending on the lesson, obviously, but for a lot of the lessons, you know, I've been teaching with a course book for a very long time. I'm pretty good at it, right? I can pick up a course book and go pretty fast. And obviously I have all my extra stuff already ready. So I don't need to do a lot of preparation. But when it comes to doing the same lesson online, then I have to prepare. So, I mean, one example I could give you here is one of my favorite features in Zoom, just to mention briefly, is that when you screen share something, you can choose to share the computer sound with it. So this means whatever is whatever sound you have on the computer, the students will hear as well. So one thing I like to do is I like to get my lessons ready in advance, put as much into a single PowerPoint as I possibly can. The content of the lesson is all within the one PowerPoint. I'm not having to jump around from one platform to another within Zoom and sharing different things. I like to have everything in the one PowerPoint there, and then that's it, it's all there. So, for example, if there's a listening activity, I would embed the audio in the PowerPoint, and then I can just share it from within that, and it's very simple. I know this maybe sounds a bit complicated, but basically all you're doing is you have a PowerPoint presentation, you add an audio file to the slide, and then from there, you can just click on it to play the audio to your students. So, for example, I have an audio file here. Let's just have a quick listen, and you guys should be able to hear this.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world.
James, don't do that to me. You made me jump.
So what they've just heard is, of course, Christian's famous introduction to this podcast. And you can imagine that just having it here within the PowerPoint is so much faster than if I said, okay, now we're doing a listening. Okay, hold on, everyone. Come out of the PowerPoint. Go to the media player. Share that. Push play. Go back into the PowerPoint. It's just so much easier. So that's about preparation, right? That's about preparing in advance something which doing an audio listening face-to-face is very quick and easy. When I'm doing it online, I have to do that extra bit of work. So whatever it is that you're doing in that lesson, make a point of going through and making sure that everything's quick and easy and ready to go. All right, so let's go on to the third point in my lesson. Okay, Christian and Tanya, you will well know that when we're doing the podcast, we have spoken a lot about the technical setup for recordings. These two are used to me kind of moaning at them.
I've just asked you to turn your fan off, actually, a couple of times, James.
They're used to me saying, okay, like, you know, make sure your window is closed if you have noisy traffic outside. Close the door so that you don't have anyone living in your house sort of coming in and trying to speak to you. And so, of course, you don't have to have a professional like recording studio when you teach online, but you do have to do your best to create the best environment that you can. Yes, you need to wear headphones. You have to wear headphones, right? It can help with things like feedback, and it means that your audio quality is going to be better because you have a microphone close to your mouth instead of further away. And you can hear your students more clearly, and they can hear you. So all of this, everything we can do to help with our setup is about making the experience as good for the learners as we can. That's the priority, right? Because, of course, it's still not perfect teaching online. You're still going to get little glitches. You'll still get some technical issues. But you're trying to do as much as you can to alleviate those problems. So if you don't have the fastest internet connection in the world, then maybe you need to ask the people you live with to ease off on the Netflix while you're working, because you need that bandwidth for the video that you're using for teaching. It could be things like this. So just do the best you can to minimize any technical issues and disturbances within your environment.
Sounds good.
Excellent, yeah.
Yep, very good advice.
Okay, and then my final tip for today is to have some kind of back channel with the learners. So you don't want to only rely on one platform to be communicating with them, because things go wrong. Your internet might go down, their internet might go down. And when that happens, you can sort of be left high and dry. You can just be sitting there staring at your computer thinking, what's going on? You need to have another means of communication available to them. Apart from that, it's also just quite useful. I mean, so for me, it's WhatsApp, because all my students are Brazilians. Everyone in Brazil uses WhatsApp, like, all the time. You pretty much can't live here without it. So for me, it's also very useful. So for example, if I want them to watch a video and they don't have comprehension questions in front of them because it's an extra activity or something like this, I can just copy, paste and send them those questions so they can see them on their phone while they watch the video on their computer. It can provide you with a way of giving them text which they can then refer to during the lesson. And anything that you've written down, if you prefer that to using the chat option within your platform, then you could, because then they can keep that record for later if they want to look at it later. It's there in the chat. So both for this, in the sense that you need to make sure that you have something ready in case it goes wrong, and also as an alternative way of sharing things with your learners. It's very useful.
I think that's really good advice.
Yeah, great, definitely.
And I would recommend, if you can, it obviously depends on how you feel about it personally, email is not really the best way of having that back channel. I mean, it can be okay for certain things, but it's not very fast. It's not a messenger service. So it's kind of more difficult to have a conversation through email. Obviously, if you don't want to share your personal information with your students, that's completely understandable. But you might want to look into some other way of doing that.
And what happens if the technology breaks down altogether? What to do in that scenario?
Well, there are times when I have a student who lives in India, and sometimes her internet just stops. And when that happens, then she has to rearrange the lesson. You know, we make it up later. Sometimes that happens, you know, there's no way around it. And if that happens, what else can you do? You know, you can't sort of fight it.
I would say make sure you have material embedded in a syllabus around that one lesson. It goes without saying, we plan a scheme of works as teachers. Yeah. But for example, it's very conducive to flipped learning. Mm. And so if you set up activities before the online class, then the student has something to do to bounce off. Mm. And also there will be ongoing homework. And if for some reason your connection is interrupted and you can't do that lesson, well, there might be follow-up work that's already suggested. So think around that. There are ways around it. Obviously, you're going to miss your one-to-one time, and that would need to be made up in some way. But it doesn't mean to say the study time is wasted entirely.
Yeah,
I'd like to jump in here as well, because I think it's important to note the fact, from my perspective and from our context, that there's a lot of teachers who are, I don't think that they're going to be able to just do constant synchronous teaching. So it's quite important for them to have that, I don't know, that escape valve or release valve, if you like, where there's a combination of asynchronous work plus synchronous teaching. Yeah. So I like what you said about the flipped classroom model, Christian. I think that will give a lot of teachers who are, you know, feel like they've kind of been thrown into the deep end with this a little bit more confidence and comfort moving ahead, they can send work to their students, and then a component of the class will be online.
Exactly. And the activation stage, which is so vital in person, right? So the speaking, the activating of language, et cetera, and whatever it may be, the skills that the students really need.
Yeah, and of course, it's very dependent on the kind of lesson that you're teaching, right? Or the kind of thing you're doing. I mean, a writing lesson is very different from a speaking lesson. Yeah, you have to judge as the teacher what is the best means to do this particular type of lesson.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Because also what we're faced with isn't really so much the one-to-one instruction. We're being asked to teach whole classes. And so that's when you need to access to more of like the breakout rooms, like a platform where students can talk together, for example, the interaction or speaking and listening classes, but that the teacher doesn't feel overwhelmed in thinking that I was originally teaching 3 hours face-to-face and now I have to teach 3 hours fully online synchronous, which I think is, in the current climate, I think is going to stress too many people out to think of it along those lines.
Yeah. Okay. So those are my four tips. Now, this is the bit where I do my blatant self-promotion. I have written 3 blog posts. So if you want to find out more about the things I've mentioned, then you can find them at my blog, which is called theteacherjames.com. And then, of course, we spoke about Zoom, and we talked about Google Jamboard as well, which is part of Google Drive.
So everybody, what do you think is the future of online learning?
Well, I think that almost like a revolution at this time of huge amount of teaching going on to online. And this course is not just EFL teaching in which this is happening. I think that there's a possibility that this is a sea change, that it could have a very big influence, because I think that if you think about it, you've got a lot of big schools around the world investing a lot of time and effort and money in training their teachers how to do this now. Are they going to then, when everything goes back to normal, just forget all of it? I don't think so. I think that once it's kind of been created, the effort's gone in, then they might find this is actually a very lucrative form of teaching, because they don't have to provide so many physical classrooms anymore. You don't have the overheads related. So I think that actually it may come out of this looking very attractive. to a lot of education institutions across the world.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to pick up on something you said earlier, Christian, about how you yourself have been trying to kind of incorporate more of an online learning platform in your own teaching context. And I have too, actually. And I think that one of, at least within the next year or so, after we get over this initial shock and orientation process, I think there's going to be a really positive consequence where people are going to start thinking, actually, I can incorporate more online learning components into what we provide for our students, for flexibility, for our own continued professional development. So I'm hoping that it's actually going to end up being quite a positive thing. Not that it's going to replace face-to-face teaching, but it could come in a very nice hybrid balance in the future.
And what about you, Christian?
I think hybrid is the word for the future. For the moment, it's going to completely take over. It will revolutionize things. And it's probably about time. It's already been happening. It's not that it hasn't been happening in huge sectors of the market, but it's just that others have been left behind. And in the future, I think it will have all sorts of consequences, whether they're good, bad, neutral, or something else. It's not for me to say. However, I sincerely hope, that it has positive implications in terms of collaboration worldwide. And you talked about it being a lucrative potential there. It certainly does, but I also think it's a people's tool and people need to learn language
worldwide. So why don't we use online teaching to enable the democratization of language teaching and education more generally?
For sure, agreed.
So I think that brings us to the end of this episode of DevelopPod. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Don't forget that you can subscribe to this show on your podcast player of choice, wherever you're listening, and you can keep up to date with TDSIG on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thanks very much, Christian and Tanya, for all those questions.
Thank you.
Very welcome. Thank you, James, for providing that very useful PowerPoint and talking us through some really useful tips. It was great.
Very useful, James. Thank you. As a final thought, and to address the elephant in the room, perhaps, if you can do anything to reach out online or physically, if possible, then join a local support network, if you can, or internationally. Be safe, everyone. Do all you can. That may just be staying safe. If you're safe, we're safe. Take care. And thank you for listening.